Super Bowl 59, the matchup is set with a rematch of Super Bowl 57 with the Chiefs and the Eagles, the one that everybody wanted. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has three touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that six or seven spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright with CJ Medeiros and Chris Kostich. We have a good one planned for you guys today. And these playoffs have been a very much of a mixed bag. And so, our matchup is set. We have the Eagles who are facing the Chiefs. This matchup literally happened 2 years ago. Last year, the Eagles had pretty much the same scheme as they did do this year, except now they have Saquon Barkley. They still have a very good offensive line. Their defense is in some ways better than it was that year. I think their front seven may not be quite as good, but their secondary is certainly better. They have some young kids who have been awesome this year, and they still have Darius Slay. So this is a very good Eagles team. This is probably the most focused that I have seen Nick Sirianni in his entire time as the Eagles head coach. He looks like an adult now. He actually carries himself like a professional head coach, which is great stuff because Sirianni was always a good coach. His ego just always got in the way. And he really locked in this year, which, hey, you know, listen, let's give credit where it's due. As for the Kansas City Chiefs, they are back in the Super Bowl. For the third year in a row, fifth time in seven seasons, and seven straight conference championship appearances, obviously, as we covered last week. This is something else of a run, but we're going to go over the conference championship matchups, kind of recap. And so we're going to start with the NFC Championship, where the Eagles demolished the Commanders 55-23. And now, the final score is, I guess, a little bit misleading because for a good amount of this game, it was somewhat a good matchup. It was kind of a two-score game in and out for a little while. It was in the fourth quarter where things just went out of hand. 21 points scored for the Eagles in the fourth quarter to the Commanders laying a goose egg. They pretty much completely fell apart in the second half. The Commanders scored 8 points in the second half alone to add up to 23. And looking at this matchup, so Jaden Daniels, 29 for 48, 255 yards, one touchdown, one pick. He had six carries for 48 yards and a touchdown. He was their lead rusher as well. Zach Ertz, 11 receptions, 104 yards. He's a former Eagle who was a big part of their last, or rather their only championship back in 2017. I got to say, there's nothing I can take away from the Commanders that makes me say, ooh, that is not a good sign. Nothing could have happened in this game besides Jaden Daniels completely crapping all over himself, which didn't happen. Nothing could have happened here where we could have said, man, Washington is in such a bad spot. Your rookie quarterback went to the conference championship, and so what? He didn't make a Super Bowl. Do you know how many rookie full-time starting quarterbacks have been to a Super Bowl? None. Zero. So I give Washington a lot of credit for just making it to where they made it. They go for the second from the second overall pick to making the final four. And you know, the Eagles are in win now mode. They're the team of today. The Commanders are the team of tomorrow. But focusing on this Eagles team, Saquon Barkley, 15 carries, 118 yards, three rushing touchdowns. Jalen Hurts rushed for three touchdowns as well. He threw for one, was 20 for 28. This Eagles team is a well-oiled machine, and the way they got better as the season went on was just a beautiful thing to watch. Just seeing them, they started off really poorly, and we thought Nick Sirianni was on borrowed time, but they got better and better and better as the season gone on. And here they are back in the Super Bowl, second time in 3 years. But guys, thoughts on this matchup here?
I think he hit the nail on the head with in terms of Washington. I mean, like, playoff games like this are bound to happen to specific teams. And Washington, like, I think the only thing that you can really say is that the fact that you even made it to the NFC Championship is a success in itself. It's going to suck, obviously, because you made it this far and you were one game away from the big one. But at the end of the day, it's really about the bigger picture when you're talking about Washington. And it's unfortunate, too, because Jaden Daniels had a good game. None of this was his fault at all. It's not his fault that Austin Eckler fumbled. Jeremy McNichols fumbled as well on the opening kickoff or on one of the kickoffs. Deami Brown fumbled as well. This Washington team was, besides Jaden, just had a very bad game. Defense couldn't stop a nosebleed. I mean, the moment that Saquon took that opening handoff to the house on the first play of their drive basically just sealed the fate for Washington at that point. But, like, you have a fumble on your second drive of the game that turns into a score for Philly. You're able to somewhat make it a game going into the two-minute warning. Eagles score. And all of a sudden, Jeremy McNichols fumbles on the ensuing kickoff. Then the Eagles score again. Deami Brown fumbles in the second half. Just all around a bad, bad day for Washington. But like I said, it's all about the bigger picture when you look at them. And they're going to be in a great spot going into next year. And a lot of cap space as well to work with. Granted, there's going to be a lot of guys that are on one-year prove-it deals right now that you're going to have to think about, all right, we're going to re-sign these guys. We're not going to re-sign these guys, you name it. In terms of the Eagles, Jesus Christ, I mean, Jalen Hurts had a very good game. He's still very frustrating to watch sometimes because, you know, you have A.J. Brown one-on-one Marshawn Lattimore, and he won't throw to A.J. Brown unless he's bare ass, which still is so frustrating to watch sometimes. But Saquon Barkley is a dog. Jalen Hurts, fantastic game. A.J. Brown's a dog. This whole team is insane. Quinyon Mitchell got himself an interception. Great to see that. Didn't have an interception all regular season. Has an interception in back-to-back games in the playoffs. That's the other thing, too. Like, Jaden Daniels didn't throw an interception until the last drive that he was in for, and you probably don't even need to count that because they're just trying to get fucking points on the board. It's just throw it up, see what the fuck happens. But Eagles got a lot of momentum now riding into the Super Bowl, and I think compared to the first time around between the Eagles and the Chiefs, I think this year the Eagles have a much better shot at getting it done against the Chiefs this year.
CJ.
Regardless of the outcome of the game, I think most NFL fans, even some Philly, probably not Giants or Cowboys, you know, you got to like tip your hat to the Commanders. I mean, it's a well-established fact that I liked Jaden Daniels in the pre-draft process, but even I didn't think this man was going to go to the NFC Championship game. And hey, he was worth that pick, worth every penny, the best rookie quarterback so far. You know, just like in this class, best. But it's just, I want to say that not going to the Super Bowl, and look, Commanders fans, I know you're upset. You got your hopes up, made the first conference championship since, I don't know, since well before the 2000s. And, you know, it sucks that you didn't go to the big one. I get it. But Commanders, I just want to say, I feel like you not winning this game might be a blessing in disguise. Because, come on, they were not beating Kansas City. Kansas City was just going to just break them in several pieces. And, you know, quarterbacks that lose their first Super Bowl appearance rarely make it back, except for Jalen Hurts, apparently. That's a fun stat. He actually made it back. Whether or not he wins, we'll see. But hey, for Commanders, I can't fault you. You had a great season. But please, for the love of God, take heed of all these other Cinderella teams with youngins that, you know, that went very far early on and then fell short. In case you're wondering, I am talking about last year's Texans and the year before that's Jaguars. So just, I don't know, just, you know, like, don't get complacent. That's all I'll say, because I feel like there was a little bit of that in Houston, Jacksonville. But I feel like the Commanders are actually on the mend now that their boogeyman and Dan Snyder has been told to F off right into the Potomac where he belongs. And as for Philly, I know that for the most part it was a two-score game and technically winnable for the Commanders. But literally from the opening kickoff, was there ever a time in that game where you felt like the Commanders were actually in control? And even though it was technically within reach, did you ever for a second outright believe, oh, hey, they're going to do it? I personally didn't. And like I said, like, you know, it's good, like good for you guys for making it that far. And even though, like you said, it was a two-score game for most of the time, which is technically within reach, they were never in control. From the opening kickoff, like I said, and from the Eagles' first drive, which was just like, what was it, like a long run for a tutty by Saquon? You never had control, and that just sucks. And it's no knock on Jaden Daniels, but, you know, you're a young team, and honestly, the lights just got too bright for him. And that's not an indictment on him because, you know, he's a rookie. And I know he wanted to win the big one, but at the end of the day, you can hold your head high knowing that you took the second overall pick. You know, you were the second worst team in the league last season, and you flipped that into being NFC runner-up.
I would go a step further and say, like, I wouldn't say the lights were too bright for Jaden. I would just say the lights were just too bright for the Commanders as a whole.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot going on there. But for Philly, don't screw it up is all I'm going to say. You're in a much better spot than you were, like you said, the last time you made the Super Bowl. Jalen Hurts has gotten better. He's developed more of a chemistry with A.J. Brown, hopefully. Dallas Goedert is just that much better. Devontae Smith has developed nicely. Your defense has gotten so much better. There's no longer, what's his name there, James Trashberry. Now you've got the good duo youngins in Cooper DeJean and, who could forget, Quinyon Mitchell, who might have a defensive rookie of the year case. Then again, as a regular season award, so we probably won't get it, but he's very deserving. And even, and heck, even Darius Slay is still playing at a solid level. And you got your X factor in Saquon Barkley. Please. And also another big thing, Sirianni is actually, you know, acting like an adult for once. So from a pure talent perspective, there's no reason you should lose. I'll end on that.
All right. I have two big takeaways from this game. Number one, so I already kind of gave off my first takeaway, which is that there's really nothing that I could say negative about Washington. And I do believe they had a chance. There were some times where momentum went to their side and they just gave it away. There were some fumbles. There were some times where they were able to score and then they just gave the points right back. But either way, there wasn't really a point where I felt the Eagles weren't going to win. I just felt the Commanders had a chance at some points.
I feel either like way, that their biggest chance was either way, like the end of the first half, but
end of the first half. I agree.
Yeah.
Either way, the way I look at it, I mean, the Commanders, they lost in the exact way that we thought they would. All of their weaknesses were very prominent in this game. They weren't losing by their strengths. Their strengths did not fail in this game. Jaden Daniels was fine for a rookie quarterback in the NFC Championship game. Terry McLaurin was fine. Their passing game was okay. I guess their rushing game wasn't great, but whatever. This is the postseason. You're going to see a lot more passing. As far as their weaknesses, we know what their weaknesses are, and they have the cap space to hit on those needs this offseason. They're going to need another target. clearly to pair up with Terry McLaurin. They're going to need some defensive pieces, but they have all of the money and resources to do it. So Washington's in a great spot regardless of what happened. And three out of the five quarterbacks, rookie quarterbacks prior to Jaden Daniels this past weekend, who have been to an NFC championship their rookie year, three out of those five went back and made it a step further into the Super Bowl. Two of those guys won a Super Bowl. Joe Flacco, Ben Roethlisberger won twice. Brock Purdy went, lost, but his career is still going, so we'll see what happens. Either way, things look great. I was going to save this takeaway for our Super Bowl initial thoughts when we first start on our Super Bowl preview. I was going to save this for that, but I'm going to give it now. Saquon Barkley is having arguably the best season of any running back ever. Forget Adrian Peterson's MVP run. No disrespect to him. Forget Eric Dickerson's single season rushing record. Forget both of those. Saquon Barkley, over 2,000 yards. He's flirting with, including postseason, he's flirting with 3,000 scrimmage yards, including postseason, which has never been done before. He has a chance to be the centerpiece of a Super Bowl champion on his birthday, by the way. On his birthday, the centerpiece of a Super Bowl champion in an era where run-first offenses, especially ones that are centered around the running back, never win anymore. And that's no disrespect to the rest of the roster. You obviously, A.J. Brown's really good, Devontae Smith, Jalen Hurts is a very good quarterback. I'm just saying, like, the fact that Saquon Barkley, the probable offensive player of the year, has a chance to win you a Super Bowl and be the centerpiece, the focal point of that offense. I think that says a lot about Saquon Barkley. It says a lot about his untapped potential for years as he was rotting away in New York. The one year he goes into the environment that is perfect for him, he does everything that we thought that he could potentially do. 2,000 rushing yards, flirting with 3,000 total, including postseason. Possible Super Bowl MVP if they win it. All of these things, he has the potential to have the greatest running back season, single running back season of all time. And it would mean he'd be a surefire Hall of Famer as well. First ballot. Unbelievable stuff that he's doing. And I feel so happy for him that after all of these years of being in the basement of the NFC East with the Giants, that finally he has a chance to do everything that he ever wanted to do and do it on his birthday.
So basically what you're saying is hammer Saquon Barkley anytime touchdown because it's his birthday.
Yes.
Probably, okay. Yeah.
And I know Emmitt Smith won a couple Super Bowls as well as the focal point of his offense. Different era. Obviously one of the greatest running backs of all time as well. Different era. Not as many yards too. Just saying. This you can make a very strong case. This is the greatest running back season of all time. Like everything is going his way this year, which is awesome to see.
You could also make the point as well that this could be one of the more influential running back seasons of all time, because you could say that this season this season from Saquon, and you can name all the other running backs that had spectacular seasons that got onto new contracts, like Josh Jacobs, Derrick Henry, Joe Mixon, resetting the running back market so that other guys can't get paid. Now, the guys that are set to be free agents this year aren't necessarily guys that I would definitely throw money at, but it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a good point as well, because, I mean, the league has been starting to notice over the past few years that running backs age like milk, unfortunately. That's just fact. Running backs age like milk. And even when they are in their prime, the vast majority of the time, in fact, almost all the time nowadays, they're not the centerpiece of a Super Bowl champion. They just aren't. And we've seen some really good running backs over the past few years, and they either whiff on the playoffs, they barely make the playoffs and are out before the Super Bowl, or once they reach the Super Bowl, they reach a pass heavy, they run into a pass heavy team, and they end up, it just falls apart, and they're not making the same impact because just game script. But yeah, if Saquon does this, then it's going to revolutionize the running back market and create a mini renaissance for all of the other running backs who hit free agency. And teams are going to look at it and say, well, the Eagles just did it with Saquon. Why don't we do it here?
I think at that point, though, you also have to have teams look themselves in the mirror. And because you look at the Eagles and they were ready to get a guy like Saquon. They already had a loaded roster. They were already going to be Super Bowl contenders. And then now you add Saquon and now they're a Super Bowl favorite. I think that if you're going to be a team that's going to go after a sought out running back, say like Saquon, you got to be a team that already has a loaded roster like the Eagles did and are going to be ring hunting in the ensuing season or two before you end up unloading a bag like that. Because at that point, you're just unloading a bag on a running back when it's like, all right, now what? Where are we going to go now?
Yeah, we'll figure that out when we get there. We're obviously getting way ahead of ourselves. They could end up losing.
Yeah.
And even if they do win, what if Saquon is just passive in this game? He kind of puts up a dud and it's Jalen Hurts who takes over with AJ Brown or something, or the defense takes over. You know, you never know. But what Saquon could potentially do on February 9th, his birthday, by the way, he could do some great things for the running back position, which is a running back, which is a position that the league is starting to care less and less about over the past few years. All right, we're going to move on to the other conference championship matchup, the AFC championship, Chiefs-Bills, episode 4, the same ending. We're going to get into how it met that end. And boy, was it a roller coaster. Next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. I'm Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, Chris Kostich. All right. I dreaded covering this game to relive it, but here we are. And the Chiefs have beaten the Bills again in the playoffs by a score of 32-29. 3 out of the 4 matchups have been one-score games. And these have been, regardless of how lopsided they have been, these have been some exciting playoff matchups, and it just sucks that the Bills haven't been able to come out on top for one of these. Because, I mean, this is, as far as the rivalry goes, this is just looking as, it's looking as bad as it gets. Because last year, we were getting a lot of Brady-Manning rivalry comparisons. And listen, at least by the 3rd matchup, Manning came out on top for one of them. And in the postseason, Manning actually won more of them. Manning had a 3-2 advantage. It was basically the home team won, but it was a very, very competitive rivalry based on the record. The games are competitive here. The competitiveness is there. These are some classics. But as far as the rivalry, it would be a closer comparison would be to if you clone Patrick Mahomes and had Patrick Mahomes face Patrick Mahomes in the postseason. That would be a closer one. So it's not even any disrespect to Josh Allen. He's probably going to be a Hall of Famer. He's one of the better quarterbacks in the league. Probably one of the best. But he's just nowhere close to Patrick Mahomes. That's the problem. Patrick Mahomes is an all-time great quarterback. So getting into this game. The thing is, the Chiefs had the lead the entire first half. So, to Chris's credit, what he pointed out the Bills had to do was to come out early, step on their throat, punch him in the mouth. I mean, when he posted the reel about it on our Instagram, he sounded like Dan Campbell talking about it. And he was right. That's exactly what needed to happen. and it didn't. But somehow, they still crept back into this game and did take a lead in the third quarter, 22-21. First takeaway here. They went for the Bills went for two twice and failed on both of them. Those 2 points ended up being pretty big, but either way, the Chiefs ended up retaking the lead 29-22. Patrick Mahomes with his, it was his second rushing touchdown of the game. And then the Bills managed to tie it again, 29-29. Chiefs got a field goal. And a big thing in this game, and this seemed like it was the momentum changer as well, was some of the calls by the officials. You guys on the show know, if you've listened with any sort of regularity to this show, know that I don't like blaming the refs for losses. I don't like doing it, even if it's the Chiefs. I just don't like it. I think bad calls happen, and I think it's going to happen more to the good teams because the good team is going to be ahead when the bad call is made, if that makes any sense. It's just the nature of the game. But this season for the Chiefs has been so extreme, you just can't ignore it. It's you can point at any singular Chiefs game all season, and you can point at so many calls that have gone their way that it's like, really? What? And there was one where it was a fourth and one. The Bills were up, and they were in Chiefs territory. Fourth and one. Josh Allen goes for a quarterback sneak. And the call is made initially as a first down. You could see one, the near field judge running up saying first down. It was the far field judge saying first down. Then you see the other one move up. And he's about a foot short. And they're discussing it. They overrule it after a discussion saying, nope, first down Chiefs. They reviewed it. There wasn't enough conclusive evidence to overturn it. So they stuck with the call on the field, which turned out to be short and first down Chiefs, turnover on downs for the Bills. And that happened to be the drive when it turned into first down Chiefs, where the Chiefs drove down the field and scored the go-ahead touchdown. And it was a momentum changer. Now, the Bills still ended up coming back to tie it. But either way, if they make that, maybe the Bills score again. We'll never know. There was also another play. It was in the first half. The ball was chucked up by Patrick Mahomes inside the 5-yard line to Xavier Worthy. And it looked like it was an interception. We couldn't tell at first. It was a jump ball. Xavier Worthy goes up. He gets one hand on it. The Bills defender, I'm forgetting who it was at the moment. Was it Taron Johnson?
I don't think it really matters.
It doesn't matter.
It really doesn't.
The Bills defender got two hands on it. You can see on the replay, the ball hit the ground anyways. But they ruled it a catch for the Chiefs. If it's not going to be an incomplete pass at all, that should have been an interception for the Bills. It should have either been an incomplete pass or an interception for the Bills. The Bills defender had two hands on it with the ball secured. Xavier Worthy had one hand on the ball. Now he hooked it with like a little eagle claw there. But you could clearly see the Bills defender had more control on the ball.
I just want to point out that it actually wouldn't have mattered anyways because the Bills were called for holding on the play.
Right.
But
either
with that being said, that's also the difference of 15 yards, though.
That's still holding it. That holding call was declined.
Yeah, because the holding call was declined because of the catch.
Because of the catch that was like a 30-yard reception? inside the 5 yard line.
Except, was it really a hold though? Also, that was also a really ticky tack holding call.
Listen, I don't remember the exact call, but
I'm not one to blame the refs on things, and I'm not going to blame the Chiefs for the refs making bad calls. They won the game. It fair and square. It's not the Chiefs' fault that the refs have been terrible this season. And I don't want to take anything away from the Chiefs' greatness. However, they should not be 15-2 good. And maybe they don't make the Super Bowl this year. Maybe they still do it. But what just happened here just feels like we should be sitting here in awe of a Chiefs team on the verge of doing something that no team has ever done before. But just something about it feels hollow. Your thoughts?
I'm not going to bitch about the refs because I feel like the refs, there's only two calls that really mattered in this game, if you want to call it that. But at the end of the day, the Bills had their chances and Sean McDermott shat his pants again. But real quick, back to that catch, no catch, whatever you want to call it. It was a 26-yard play from the Bills' 29-yard line. Defensive holding was called on DeMar Hamlin, which now that I'm remembering it, that was most certainly holding on DeMar Hamlin. So we're talking a 10-yard penalty. That brings it out to the Buffalo 19 instead of the Buffalo 3-yard line, if you rule that an interception or an incomplete pass. That's the last thing I'm going to say about that. I'm done with that. Now, that 4th-and-1, I mean, yeah, blind eye. I think everyone thought that Josh Allen got the first down. The problem is that you had the far ref who doesn't have the clearest angle of it calling it a first down, whereas the near side ref who probably has the best look at it saying he's short. Now, if they had marked it as a first down and went to review and saw it was inconclusive, what are we saying then?
You can make your point, but I just, each sideline judge's view, one of them, the one who called the first down, had a better view, like could actually see the football. The one who didn't call the first down did not have a view and tried to overrule the guy who called the first down.
Anyways.
Finish making your point, though.
This is more of a coaching malpractice on Sean McDermott and Joe Brady. More than anything. Because they could not get short yardage situations for the life of them. They, on the defensive side of the football, I mean, Mahomes was averaging 9.4 yards per attempt. Every single passing down, he got 9.4 yards. That is, if you're the Bills, you might as well get shot in the fucking face for that. And when you look at the Bills in every short yardage scenario that they had, they tried to do a tush push, and they were doing it wrong. And every time they did it, Tony Romo said it right after Josh Allen did it the first time. Josh Allen likes to do this QB sneaks off to the left, off of the left guard. And as soon as he said that, I said to myself, Bills are not going to get a single quarterback sneak the rest of the day. Like, they didn't even get it on that first one on the goal line, and they sure as shit didn't even get it. And the only time they did get it was when Josh Allen hopped over the line of scrimmage in a disastrous play where he even fumbled the ball, but ended up recovering it anyways because he basically fell on top of it when he hopped over the line. If anything, the Bills were better off just having Josh Allen line up in the gun, just like Cam Newton used to do on the Panthers, prime Cam Newton on the Panthers, heavy goal line formation, and just have him running up the fucking middle. But instead, they tried their own jackass version of a tush push, and they failed every single time. How about instead of running it 4 times and not realizing that the Chiefs had figured you out because they didn't figure you out in game. They figured you out in film because that's the Chiefs, a good football team's watch film and know what the fuck you're doing. They decide to run it over and over again because they're fucking idiots. And that's the problem with the Bills, is that their roster this year, granted, Josh Allen was the catalyst and was able to get this team to the AFC Championship and cover up all the flaws of this team. This is the problem year in and year out. They want Josh Allen to play hero ball, and you can't expect Josh Allen to play hero ball against the Chiefs anymore. You just can't do it. Year in and year out. And Josh Allen didn't have a bad, he had a bad start. He had a bad start. Two throws that should have been intercepted. He was able to shake off the jitters a little bit. But even then, there was still plays where Josh Allen didn't look great. He didn't have great plays out there. He had a solid game. But like I said, you can't expect Josh Allen to go out there and play perfect the way you've done the last three times. It's just not going to happen, especially with the way this offensive roster is built. And also on that point, last drive of the game that the Bills have, they don't have James Cook out there, who's, besides Josh Allen, is your best offensive player, and you don't have him in the game. Fourth down and five, game's on the line. You know Steve Spagnuolo is going to send the freaking blitz. Why don't you have a running back or someone extra inside in the backfield to block one of the two extra guys that are blowing up your offensive line? And then you have to force Josh Allen to throw up a prayer off his back foot while getting hit, which Dalton Kincaid probably could have caught or should have caught. It shouldn't have to come down to that. I'm sorry. Like, it should not have to come down. We could talk about the refs all we want, but at the end of the day, Sean McDermott once again shit his pants. Joe Brady, I thought he had a lot of great play calls, but the fact that he's calling the plays and he's also going to be a part of the fact that they ran four quarterback sneaks and barely got one is insane to me. Third and eight, game's on the line. What do you do? Soft zone against the Chiefs when their bread and butter on these play calls is slipping the running back into the flat, wide ass open. I don't even watch every single Chiefs game, and I could tell you what their bread and butter plays are because that's how they win. They go to it every time. I just can't, like, I just don't understand how you go all week watching the film, doing all this shit, and not think, oh, well, this spot, Spagnuolo might send the blitz, but I'm going to bet on the chance that he's going to drop everybody but three rushers back instead of sending seven. Or maybe they won't go to the running back in the flat this time on third and eight, and we're going to leave our slowest running back to cover Samaje Perine. Think about that. Think about that. I just, every year that Sean McDermott is going to be the head coach of this team, they're further and further away from going to the Super Bowl, and they will forever meet the Chiefs in the AFC Championship or wherever it is in the playoffs and always lose to the Chiefs. You know why? Because the Chiefs will always be the better prepared team. They will always come up big when it's a one-score game. I said it on Friday, too. One-score game going into the fourth quarter, the Bills were going to lose. And the Bills were up by one going into the fourth quarter, and they lost. Is it really a surprise? Seriously. Like,
when it keeps happening, like, every single game this season, they haven't lost a one-score game, by the way, this season. Literally, the only legitimate game that they lost, because let's face it, week 18 was a washout. The only legitimate game that they lost, the Bills beat them by two scores.
Yeah.
But like,
great teams, it's happened that many times. Win one score games. We can talk about the refs all we want, but great teams still figure out ways to win these one score games.
I agree.
And that's what the Chiefs are great at. It doesn't matter if these calls are 50-50. It's how you deal with the 50-50 calls.
Listen, you said what you said before this game even started when you were previewing it. You said they had to step on their throat and start strong, and they didn't do that. They didn't have a lead. The Bills did not have a lead the entire first half of the game. So when you have a slow start like that, this happened the first two times Brady and Mahomes faced each other. Mahomes had a terrible first half in both games, if you remember. The regular season game, too. And The Chiefs ended up improving their play in the end of the game and made it competitive, and it turned into a back and forth. But if you didn't start slow, it wouldn't have been a back and forth in the first place. You would have won by a more comfortable margin. So I agree with you there. I'm not trying to blame the
Raptors. No, I didn't think you were trying to disagree with me at all. I'm just so furious, and like the whole rep talk has just gotten like so benign to me at this point, because I think everyone is missing the point of what this game is actually about. Not just like, we could talk about the two calls all we want, but at the end of the day, this lays on the head of Sean McDermott.
Yeah. Slow start by the Bills, bad coaching by the Bills the whole way through.
Yep.
Like, I agree. I completely agree with you there. And the Chiefs kind of played, I mean, as far as not making mistakes, they kind of played lights out.
Yeah. One more thing before we get to
CJ's just waiting here.
Yeah, I'm sorry, CJ, but I'm sorry for taking up some of your time here. There was a tweet that I saw from Ryan Fitzpatrick. And it was from last night or yesterday, and he retweeted some kid that from his chair was breaking down the last play of the game and talking about, like, you know, the last play of the game was also the Bills' bread and butter. They do this orbit stop motion that they like to do with Khalil Shakir, where Shakir goes in orbit motion, stops behind Josh Allen, and comes back around as a bubble into the flat. And he was trying to say, how does Josh Allen not throw that ball in the flat? Well, it's pretty simple. Josh Allen had two guys in his face 0.5 seconds after receiving the snap. But, and if you want to go a step further, then that should have been the play call, is that Josh Allen just quick throw to Shakir and let him go instead of, you know, looking for the deep pass downfield, which Josh Allen kind of had to be forced to do. And Ryan Fitzpatrick retweets this and goes, I actually really like your passion and knowledge for the game, but sitting in your comfortable swivel chair with the heater on in the house and a clicker in hand makes the game very easy. Having two unblocked, unimpeded defenders, believe it or not, is pretty difficult to navigate. I can attest to that. In the interest of credibility, please don't ever pause the tape again to talk about the space between the unblocked full-speed rushers and how the QB just needs to turn his hips and make the throw. I thought that was hilarious.
CJ.
First, I want to respond to Ryan Fitzpatrick. He has a point about, you know, how when you got more guys in your face than Joy Taylor from Fox Sports, getting your job done is going to be difficult. However, Ryan, perhaps if you were better at that, you would have been a full-time starter. So shut up. Also, your beard is stupid.
Oh, please don't say
I'm kidding. I'm kidding, Ryan. It's a beautiful beard, but no. If I'm that kid, I'm not taking any kind of shit from a backup quarterback. I'm not. Unless it's Chris. We love Chris. So here's my stance, right? Look, you guys have talked the refs to death. And the thing is, we should be excited. The Kansas City Chiefs have a shot at getting a three-peat. Never been done before. But it's hollow because like Adam said it best. It's hollow. You don't feel anything anymore. You're not afraid of Kansas City. You're just annoyed. Because at this point, it's like any time the game doesn't start going their way, flag. So, and here's the thing. Not only was Xavier Worthy literally, like I said, so there are three possibilities. Bills interception, incomplete pass, and then Xavier Worthy catching the ball. The fact that they gave him the least likely outcome is one thing, but just in case it didn't happen, they threw a phantom holding call on top of it as well. Also, Josh Allen got the first down. We can talk about who did what when, but I thought it was pretty clear. He extended over the line. And then it's like, oh, but he took his arms back. Like, doesn't matter. Forward progress. You extend the ball over, that's a first down. No ifs, ands, or buts, unless you actively run backwards, which he did not. But whatever. Like I said, it's hollow. It's just so manufactured at this point. It's literally, they're not even trying to hide it. And Kansas City Chiefs fans, you confront them with facts and logic, they'll say, they respond with quips. They respond with zingers. They're like, ha, cope and seethe, cry harder. We live in your head rent free. To which I say, no, refute my point. Let's have a debate. Here's my stance. They'll tell you to cry more. They'll claim they're living in your head. But when you read these comments, do they ever tell you you're wrong? Really, let's think critically. When you look at how they respond with snarky replies, they will never tell you that you're wrong. They never refute your point because they know it too. And at the end of the day, it's got to suck because in your heart of hearts, you know that the NFL is becoming the WWE. You know that games are being handed to you. It's just, it's soulless. But we all knew that. We all knew that. But we cannot let that be a crutch. Because, yeah, sure, whatever, the Chiefs might have been handed another game. But we have bigger problems, my fellow Americans. Long have I said that Sean McDermott has to go. I have said this for the past 2 years, have I not? And now it's literally just being laid bare. See, everyone got fooled by the fact that they had a good regular season. But I was not, because a football game is basically a chess match between two head coaches. And every time Sean McDermott goes to the playoffs, he gets intellectually bullied. He's just out-prepped. He's out-strategized. And it's just, it's getting so aggravating. And you know what the worst part is, Buffalo? It's not going to get better. Far from it, because you have now entered something that I like to call the Harbaugh-Tomlin cycle, where you're always going to play well and you're always going to come up short in the playoffs, but your very mediocre head coach can point to your regular season success and say, you can't fire me. And it's going to happen again and again. And again, because Josh Allen is just going to drag him, because Josh Allen's a great quarterback. He was arguably the best quarterback in the league. He has a shot to win his first MVP. But as long as he's playing well, Sean McDermott's going to use him as a shield. And the thing is, right, even if you were to fire him now, as much as I don't like him, any other head coach on the market is probably a downgrade, because the two sexiest names on the coaching carousel this offseason in Mike Vrabel and Ben Johnson already have new homes. As you know, Johnson went to the Bears. Vrabel went to your division rival, the Patriots. So like, what can you do? And I've said this off camera, and I'm now going to say it on camera. Their only hope, literally their only hope, is to maybe try to pry Bill Belichick from UNC, because literally everything else is a downgrade. Like, ooh, and
that's an interesting one.
At least I like to think
so. You just casually dropped like the hottest take of the episode. Like, I didn't even think of that.
True. Like, think about it. We all agree McDermott needs to go.
Belichick with Allen, that's
to replace him with. And here's something. This is something my dad always told me when coaches get fired. And I think he's right. When you fire somebody, you need to have a vision of who you're going to replace that guy with. And if plan A doesn't work, then you better have a plan B. Unless you're the Saints and you can't track anyone, but that's neither here nor there.
I had a plan B without a plan A, and you just a plan A without a plan B, and you just gave plan A just out of nowhere.
Well, yeah, that's literally like your best option. Bill Belichick, as we all know, has not yet signed his contract with UNC. So I feel like if Buffalo were to give him a ring, then, I mean, a ring as in a ring on the phone. I'm not talking about Super Bowl.
I'm pretty sure Belichick has signed the contract already. And
he did? Well, either way, does that contract literally have an out for him? That if the
it has an out that if
all right, any so he has signed it, but either way, he has a – my point is – I literally believe that is your best shot. Like, I'll give to you get one. Anyone better than McDermott. Because, like I said, you're now in the, like, what I have dubbed the Mike Tomlin, John Harbaugh cycle of where these guys are going to stay as long as they want and deliver you zero playoff results. Except the Ravens and the Steelers have it better because at bare minimum, Tomlin and Harbaugh each have a ring. McDermott does not have one and will likely never get one. Because, and like when you get down to the nitty gritty of it, right? I disagree with what Tony Romo said on the final play where he's like, oh, the Bills are running man-to-man. No, they're not. They were literally playing soft zone. They sat back and they guarded the sticks knowing that one of the ways Kansas City likes to move the ball is using the running back out of the backfield as a receiver. You know this. I literally called it out as I was watching it, and I just watched Sean McDermott crap down his leg. And even still, the Chiefs know that you like to favor the left side on fourth down, and they've been stuffing you in the QB sneak when you go left. So, Sean, Joe, what do you think you should stop doing? And at this point, it's not that they're unable to learn. It seems that they just refuse to. This is an unserious team with a serious quarterback that's headed by unserious coaches. However, Chiefs fans, take solace. I think the Bills will be back. They're not going to win. Oh, but they'll be back. That's all I got.
I'll give you one other coaching candidate, and he's on the roster. I give you Joe Brady.
After this game, you don't.
They fire Sean McDermott, and they promote Joe Brady. I think Joe Brady is a good offensive mind. He's less conservative than Sean McDermott. Joe Brady is a great offensive mind, and I don't think some of those screenplays are called late in the game if Joe Brady is the head of the coaching staff.
Yeah, but when you look at Joe Brady too, from the middle of last year to this year, like the only reason why the Bills offense started to really explode last year was because Joe Brady got put at the helm.
Yeah, so I like Joe Brady, but I also, Bill Belichick is another interesting one. I kind of like that because when Bill had the elite quarterback, he was awesome. It's just once he left, he couldn't do anything. So, listen, what the Bills do in the next this offseason is going to be interesting because like you don't know where they're going to go from here. Do they put it all on coaching? Is there something in the roster that's wrong? I don't know, but I mean they have a lot of self-reflection to kind of do this offseason. But we're going to move on and give our first thoughts, one takeaway each for Super Bowl 59, this matchup. That's all next. This is the Fumble Rooski Podcast. It may not have always showed it in the stat sheet, but you can see him making throws when he needs to make the throws.
Back-to-back games where he has 3 touchdowns.
Someone's got to get that 6th or 7th spot.
He's an elite wide receiver as a rookie.
Truly a lose-lose scenario for both sides.
Welcome back to the Fumble Rooski Podcast by Power 88 and Secret Weapon Consulting. Adam Wright, CJ Medeiros, and Chris Kostich. We are finally here to the Super Bowl portion of the season. This season really went by quick, and I can't think of a more anticlimactic ending to the season than just getting what we got 2 years ago. Two teams that most of us outside of their respected fan bases do not want it back in the Super Bowl. I kind of liked the Eagles being back in it. The Eagles are a fun team to watch. I hate their fan base, but that has nothing to do with the team.
The only Eagles fan that I'll tolerate is Mike and my cousins.
Yeah, yeah. First of all, on the Fumble Rooski Podcast, we love Mike Wardenby, great guy. And by the way, I just want to say this to both of you. I think you all know this. When I was a child, I grew up in Eagles territory. And when I tell you they are awful, except for my dad's buddy, Chris. Not you, Chris. My dad's buddy, Chris. Yeah, great guy. His family's great. But every other Eagles fan that I went to school with, talk about the most awful, godless, vicious people. They'll attack you unprovoked. It's insane. But I digress.
Listen, again, I hate their fan base, but I kind of like the team. We've already gushed over Saquon. Jalen Hurts, every time he talks, I mean, he's practically looking up motivational quotes after every game, but he's humble. He's well-spoken. He's articulate. I like Jalen Hurts. I kind of like AJ Brown. He can be a little diva-ish, but he's never been a problem to the point where he's preventing him from losing. And again, like I made that whole thing. Remember that whole thing between Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown that came out, the report? And I think Brandon Graham said something where he straight up said that they're not getting along or something along those lines. I swear to God that was made up. They made it up and planted that story so that they could give themselves bulleted material. That is 150% a conspiracy theory I just made. But would you put it past Nick Sirianni to do that? Would you put it past this Eagles organization?
I'm sorry, I blanked for that entire conspiracy theory.
Never mind. I just said that basically I said I wouldn't put it past the Eagles and Nick Sirianni to plant that story between Jalen Hurts and AJ Brown not getting along so to give themselves their own sort of bulletin material. 150% a conspiracy theory. I am not making any claims. I am just saying, would it surprise you if that ended up being true? Because I saw no signs that all of these guys were not getting along.
Low-key, I mean,
the only sign really is probably AJ Brown having a mental breakdown over not getting the ball, which goes back to what I said about why Jalen Hurts frustrates me. Is sometimes he just won't throw to AJ Brown unless he's bare ass, even though
he was playing along with it. Maybe they just said, guys, we need you to pretend you have beef here so that the media is against us and we could have our own sort of bulletin material, the us against them sort of mentality.
Yeah, maybe.
I'm just saying, I'm not making any predictions. I'm not claiming anything. I'm just saying, like, the dots would kind of connect there. But I digress. I'm going to give my, right out of the gates, I'm going to give my takeaway for Super Bowl 59. The fact that the Chiefs are back in the Super Bowl, Patrick Mahomes is in his fifth Super Bowl. He's just the third quarterback to make it to five or more Super Bowls. Tom Brady did it. John Elway did it. Now here we have Patrick Mahomes. They're the only ones to do it. And listen, my takeaway is that Patrick Mahomes has the best start for any quarterback of all time, including Tom Brady. Three Super Bowl victories Tom Brady had. So does Mahomes, with a chance to get another one. Two Super Bowl MVPs Tom Brady had in those first seven seasons. Mahomes has three. A league MVP. Mahomes has that too. He has two of them. A 50 touchdown season. Single season record. Mahomes has that too. He has 50 touchdowns, not the single season record holder. Seven conference championships for Mahomes in his first seven seasons in the league. Brady has five, which is still great, but one of those seasons, he didn't even make the playoffs. Sophomore season, we could call it a rookie slump if we, sophomore slump if we want. Either way. And five Super Bowl appearances during that time. Brady had four during that span. The only thing Brady has during that span over Mahomes is the undefeated season, the undefeated regular season and making it to the Super Bowl. That's the only thing that Brady has over him during that span. Who's to say that Mahomes won't do that at some point during the next 10 years? Who's to say he won't? He's already come kind of close this year, and it probably shouldn't have happened. Imagine if they actually have a really good team and also the refs. I'm just saying. And listen, here's where I'll come to Tom Brady's defense. Those teams were not offensive oriented. They were very conservative offensive play calling while playing defense. It was made for the 2000s. It was made for that time. The Chiefs, during the vast majority of this dynasty, you had Tyreek Hill for four of those years. Year in, year out, one of the best wide receivers in the game. With Travis Kelce during that four-year span, that's responsible for the 50-touchdown season. One of the league MVPs, of course. One of the Super Bowl victories and Super Bowl MVPs. one of the other Super Bowl appearances, all four conference championship appearances during that span. And then the year after, even after Tyreek Hill was gone, you still had Travis Kelce in 2022 at the top of his game with 1,300 yards. He's your number one target. If you have that, you're winning league MVP. Patrick Mahomes had that. League MVP. Tom Brady never had that during that early portion of that early dynasty. Never had that. He had that once. For 1 year, it was Randy Moss, and he threw 50 touchdown passes that only year. So you can kind of come to Brady's defense and say, well, different time span, different way the team was made. They were more offensive oriented. The last 2 years, they haven't been, you'll notice. Patrick Mahomes' stats have been a little more pedestrian the last two seasons because Travis Kelce has aged and they don't have a wide receiver one to go with it. And they've been more, it's been more like the Patriots early dynasty where it's a lot of defense, a great quarterback who game manages. That's fine. You end up winning Super Bowls that way too. But what I will tell you is what Patrick Mahomes has done, what he has accomplished, has been a better start to his career than Tom Brady has. And being the Tom Brady stan that I am, the Brady zealot who will never admit up until the next 15 years from now when Mahomes maybe gets his eighth ring, I will never admit that Brady is better than that. Mahomes is better than Brady. But what I will admit now, this is a much, much better start to Mahomes' career than Tom Brady's career. And it's really not close anymore.
I mean, you have a point, but one thing you forgot is that Mahomes is also playing in an easier era.
Yeah.
And it's not even just the way the team is built. Mahomes has it much easier. Also, he was a first-round pick. Brady was a sixth. And Mahomes was sat his first year because they were developing him. Brady was sat because he was a sixth-round pick. I'm just saying.
And they had just paid you're right, to a lifetime deal.
Yeah, pretty much. What was it, like 10 years, 100 mil? Yikes. But my point paid. Is, like, you're right. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, I'll just throw that in there, defensive Brady. So, I don't know. Are we moving on to Chris? Or?
Yeah, move on to Chris. I've said my piece.
Understandable.
Yeah, I mean, not much else to add, really. It's like, when I think of Brady and the way he played, the era that he played in, it just, and then I look at the way Mahomes plays and Aries playing, and it's just like, I feel it's, we're just talking about two different, it's like LeBron and Jordan. We're talking about two different peas in a pod. Like,
yeah, I mean, get ready for it. Get ready for it. It's gonna happen. We are literally seeing an NFL version of LeBron versus Jordan.
Yeah.
Except Brady beat Mahomes when it mattered, and for me that's gonna be something Mahomes always gonna struggle to get past. Also, imagine Mahomes scrambling is to run to Ray Lewis or Brian Urlacher. Dude would be in a wheelchair by year two.
Brady juked out Brian Urlacher.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing, is that, like, you know, when Brady's playing, he had no fucking problem getting up into Ray Lewis's face and telling him what's up. He had no problem getting into the face of the baddest motherfuckers in the league. James Harrison, Ray Lewis, you fucking name it. He was getting up in their grill, talking his shit, and then the next play, shoving the ball down their fucking throat.
All right. But Chris, yeah, what's your takeaway for this matchup?
My takeaway, hammer the over. Just hammer the over. If you are an American and you love the Super Bowl, you're hammering the over at 49.5. That's my takeaway. I think that everyone's talking about how they're not excited for this game and how no one wants this game. They're not even going to watch the Super Bowl. Shut the fuck up. It's the Super Bowl. You're going to watch the game. You're going to enjoy the game because it's football. And I love football. Adam loves football. CJ loves football. America loves football. And if you don't like the Super Bowl, you might as well be a freaking communist. If you're not betting the over nice and hoping that points aren't scored in this game, then you're a communist. God bless America. God bless you all. God bless the troops. Gentlemen, start your engines. But one more thing in terms of the betting world, I guess. When you look at the opening lines, of course, you talk about over under 49.5. I think that's an easy over just based off of how the scoring has been just from both the Chiefs and the Eagles, even last week. Granted, I might be putting my foot in my mouth because both defenses are pretty good, but we also said the same thing 2 years ago. And they both put up 30 plus points, but you look at the spread of this game for the opening line, at 1.5 in favor of the Chiefs. This is just like prime Chiefs are about to break your heart type of line here. This is the same line that they gave for the Bills Chiefs game. And it's the same line now. Granted, the line's probably going to change the next 2 weeks, but I can't just think to, I just can't not wonder or think, like, seen this story before, seen this line too many times. I have a feeling what's coming next, but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong, but if I'm a better, I'm hammering Chiefs 1.5. That's for sure. Those are my big time Super Bowl in-depth analysis for this Tuesday. 2 weeks before the game.
My big takeaway for the Super Bowl is that, honestly, legacies could very well be cemented in this game. And sure, we could talk about Mahomes and all that, but we already knew that if he retired right now, he's a Hall of Famer. That's cool. Kelce, hot take, I don't care if the Chiefs win it this year. He's not the GOAT tight end. This year and the last year, I think he played himself out of that conversation. I think he's number three because he's essentially a wide receiver, whatever. You'd say another hot take about Gonzalez, either or, huh?
I have a hot take about Travis Kelce once you're done.
Oh, I'm scared. But my point is, so there's that. So whether, regardless of Mahomes and Kelce, there's something else we need to talk about. Guard Joe Tooney. This man has 2 rings with New England and 3 rings with Kansas City right now, I believe.
Yep.
No, 2 rings with Kansas City because he wasn't there for the first one.
Oh, yeah, no, you're right.
So this man could end up with 5 rings, and that I do believe, I'm sorry, if you're a guard with 5 rings, you're a slam dunk for the Hall of Fame, no ifs, ands, or buts. Also, this dude is a kick-ass guard. Also, let's not forget, he's kind of taking a back seat, but the Chiefs had DeAndre Hopkins. And though I don't want the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl because it's hollow, manufactured, and a lot of people, most people, in fact, might put an asterisk on it, whether you agree with it or not, Adam. Seeing Hopkins get a ring, that might, I mean, some people say he's a fringe Hall of Famer. Some people say he's a slam dunk. But if he gets a ring, he's going to Canton, whether you like it or not, AFC South fans, Titans, Colts, Jaguars fans who were terrorized by him. And on the Philly side, man, A.J. Brown getting a ring, wouldn't that be something? That'd be nice. But the big one for me there is Saquon. Can you imagine Saquon Barkley getting a ring, literally the first year he leaves the Giants? That'd be something. So my point is, legacies beyond Mahomes can be cemented.
We've talked to death Saquon Barkley, but I'm glad you brought up DeAndre Hopkins, because you want to do you want to hear the list of quarterbacks?
Oh, DeAndre, yeah, Hopkins, I saw this. Read it off, man. And keep in mind, folks, before Adam starts, like 3/4 of these guys are like from the Texans alone.
This is a long list, and it just shows how much that this guy has gone through. And now he finally gets to play with a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback in Patrick Mahomes. Let's read off this list. Matt Schaub, Case Keenum, and not the good Case Keenum from like that 1 year in Minnesota. No. Ryan Fitzpatrick, Ryan Mallett, Brian Hoyer, TJ Yates, Brandon Whedon, Brock Osweiler, Tom Savage, Deshaun Watson, Kyler Murray, Colt McCoy, Trace McSorley, Will Levis, Ryan Tannehill, Malik Willis, Mason Rudolph. the fact that he has put up the stats that he has during his career with that list of bums, unbelievable.
Well, I'm talking about Trace McSorley like that. He was throwing it on a diamond shit. Come on.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Come on now. Listen, I'm not backing off on that because maybe Kyler Murray, he's an okay passer to get your wide receivers the ball. Maybe Deshaun Watson during his Texans days. But, I mean, the fact that this guy, I mean, even before Deshaun Watson with the Texans, the amount of quarterbacks were just cycling in and out. That was insane. And he was still able to put up numbers with all of them. Tom Savage, you remember that guy?
Vaguely.
They won a couple divisions with him. And not just him. Like, not him as the starting full-time starting quarterback. Like, Brian Hoyer was there. Ryan Mallett was throwing a couple to J.J. Watt. That's how much of a joke that organization was during that time.
Don't forget Matt Schaub. Ancient Brandon Whedon. Also, dude, put the respect on Matt Schaub's name. He was not a
bum. Yeah, don't be talking that rah-rah about Matt Schaub now. Come on. Don't be doing that.
Nope.
No.
Nope. They started 2-0 in 2013. How many games did they win after that? With Matt Schaub.
I don't care. Matt Schaub to Andre Johnson was one of the most lethal combinations I've ever seen in my lifetime.
Yeah. Must have had a lot of rings to it.
No, they didn't, because, you know, they had to run up against the Patriots because they were the boogeyman for everybody, not just one team. They were the boogeyman for everybody. The Patriots took away rings from Peyton Manning, Ben Roethlisberger, you name it.
Sounds pretty lethal. Philip
Rivers, too.
Philip Rivers.
We're not gonna gas up.
Matt Schaub was that guy.
We're not gonna gas up Matt Schaub.
I mean, we're not gonna give him credit where it's due. He wasn't like a bum.
We're not gonna Matt Schaub
like he's a freaking bum, like he's Mr. Irrelevant. Get out of here!
Come on now.
Oh, so was Kirk Cousins. Did they ever win any Super Bowls with him?
No, but Kirk Cousins isn't.
Doesn't mean that they wasn't good.
So according to Adam, everybody's who doesn't win a Super Bowl is a bum. That's what I'm hearing. So Lamar's a bum. Allen's a bum. Like,
well, while we're on
most of these guys lived in the time when Tom Brady and other guys were running the league.
Listen, the point stands about the quarterbacks that brought that. That DeAndre Hopkins had to work with was something else. And we've talked to death about the Giants with Saquon Barkley, letting him just rot away. And it seemed like he was going to rot away for the rest of his career in the basement of the NFC East. In his first year with a new team, a fresh start, a great run first environment for Saquon. And he does everything that he was supposed to do. Everything that we thought he could do. And it's awesome. DeAndre Hopkins is probably past his prime. He's the skeleton of DeAndre Hopkins. But still, him getting a ring, he deserves it more than anybody. Besides maybe Saquon, because holy crap. All right. Any other takeaways?
This was what I was going to say prior to the Matt Schaub discussion about Travis Kelce. So I think Travis Kelce is retiring after this season.
Really?
Yeah. Just like, I feel like it's just the way Jason Kelce has been talking about his brother in the last like week and a half. I feel like that it's coming. Like, probably not right after the Super Bowl. It's probably going to be a little bit because he's going to think about it. But like, Jason Kelce, couple days before the Super Bowl, is like, well, I don't know if I'm going to go to the Eagles game or if I'm going to go to the Chiefs game, because I don't know how many more of these games Travis is going to have left in him. And then he travels from the NFL Live pregame in Philadelphia all the way to Kansas City, and him like his body actions and whatever you want to call it when he was in Philly for that pregame show kind of just was like, Maybe he knows something that we don't. I don't know. But it just has that feeling of like, all right, maybe we're getting to that time. Maybe we're getting to that time. And Noah Gray is going to be a 1,000-yard receiver next season.
With the way Patrick Mahomes plays, it's so reminiscent of Tom Brady in the sense that you could just feed him anything and he'll turn it into something.
Yeah.
And could be a long decade and a half, just saying.
I will also maintain, though, that if Noah Gray becomes like a good tight end, then that's also hurts Travis Kelce because he's a system guy.
Well, he was. Was he drafted? He was drafted before Reed got there, right?
No, he was drafted in 2013.
Oh yeah, Reed was there. Yep. Nope.
Also, he played with Alex.
Hand up. Hand up. Hand up. I don't know ball moment.
Understandable.
You just took my wife's breath away.
All right.
If you know, you know that one clip. Chiefs fans. All right. Is that all? So that's all the scheduled content we have for today. We're going to have plenty again. So we kind of just purposefully scratched the surface with kind of our Super Bowl preview, as it's going to be 2 weeks. We just wanted to give our initial thoughts as this matchup just kind of hit us literally 2 days ago, but we're going to get to plenty of it as the week goes on. But in the meantime, that'll do it for us tonight. Thank you for listening to us. We have new episodes out on Tuesdays at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and Fridays at 5. Also, be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We have all our episodes available on Spotify, Spreaker, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and so much more. Also, be sure to follow our Instagram at FumbleRooski_podcast to keep up with our podcast and the latest coverage on the NFL. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Over and out.